Peter Levine has over 20 years' experience in the software industry, having held both venture capital and operating positions in engineering, marketing, sales, and executive management. Prior to ZenSource, Peter was managing director at the Mayfield Fund, where he spent 3 years investing in a variety of software companies. And before joining Mayfield, Peter was an early employee and programmer at Veritas Software. And during his 11-year tenure there, with rising responsibility at that company, he helped to grow the organization from no revenue, we've all been there, and 20 employees to over $1.5 billion and over 6,000 employees. So you can see where he's thinking about when he works on ZenSource. So now I'd like to present to you Peter Levine.
Excellent. Let's check the mic. Oh, good. It works. Thank you all for coming and attending this morning. The first thing I wanted to do was apologize for my slide presentation. I haven't gone through it yet, but I want to apologize before I even get started. This original keynote, if there's any folks from VMware out here, and I don't know if we have folks from VMware out here, but the original keynote was supposed to be myself and my counterpart at VMware in a panel up here. And during the course of the original keynote discussions, it didn't happen because Diane decided not to come to the thing. So anyway, for me now, we're stuck with the presentation. So happy to go do this. So what I wanted to talk about, the other thing that the survey that you need to fill, that you're going to, hopefully that was on your chair, has a different title than what's here. We'll cover all the stuff that was in the abstract, but the title is a little different. What I want to talk about is just sort of the past, present, and future, kind of where we see at ZenSource the current state of the market, the present, and where we're going in the future with some of our virtualization. So, in our view, and I came to ZenSource because I really do believe that this view is where I think we need to get to as an industry. At ZenSource, we believe that virtualization ought to be a ubiquitous feature of every system and pervasive in all IT operations. And so, our agenda as a company is really to make sure that virtualization shows up everywhere, and that the principle that there's a hypervisor across all systems such that we can unlock much of the value in IT today. I think this, virtualization is really, there's a transformational element in terms of the industry right now for virtualization, and there's a tremendous amount of excitement around it. I think everyone knows what virtualization is and where the market is right now. But it does yield profound economic benefits, improved performance, better manageability and automation. And for me, I've been around this industry for a long time, and I think that virtualization is just one of those technologies that really does have the power to really unlock the data center and unlock what happens both on a client side and on a server side. The first generation of virtualization, which is really where we are today, and this is the existing sort of state of the art as we see it today. The virtualization was originally pioneered by IBM. This technology goes back probably, as old as I am, if not older. It's been around for a long time. But VMware really pioneered the market in the mid-90s with their products, and VMware is a great company and came about at a time where there was a lot of, where there wasn't hardware support and there wasn't operating support for virtualization, yielding the need to develop a very thick stack of software that does emulation, and that's part of the first generation. So there's typically a very thick stack of software that gets you to be able to virtualize guests on top of the underlying system. The other part of that, obviously, was that operating systems at that point in time and almost still to today. So this is sort of first generation into now. Operating systems are not enlightened. There's a word, you know, sort of going out there now called enlightenment, which means that the operating system is virtualization aware. And obviously in the late 90s, early 2000, the notion that an operating system knew that it was going to be virtualized was something that just didn't exist. And furthermore, there was no hardware support at that time in first generation operating environments. There was no hardware support to optimize virtualization. Those things are changing, and so we really are looking at a transformation from sort of the original instantiation of doing virtualization to a newer architecture with new tools that actually lead us to sort of the next generation. By the way, these mountaineering pictures, I forgot to comment here. I do a lot of mountain climbing myself, and we sort of stuck some of the old pictures in. You'll see some new pictures in here. These look like my grandparents climbing a mountain, although I don't know who these people are. So then we have the guy looking into the chasm here, which I love, the crevasse, walking across the ladder. So the problems with first generation virtualization is that it does have the first generation architecture. There's limited device support, and I'll talk about this, in that in the current generation of technology, device drivers are actually a property of the virtualization stack, and so there's really limited device support because it doesn't inherently take advantage of the device drivers that are used in the operating system. There's proprietary lock-in and poor platform extensibility just because there is a big, thick piece of code that tends to run as the virtualization environment. So the current market for virtualization, which is largely dominated by VMware, and it's why, you know, ZenSource came into being as, you know, another alternative, is the current market offers limited choice in terms of, there's sort of one vendor out there, limited choice. When you are only one vendor, there's a very low rate of innovation. And, you know, because there's absolutely no reason to change if there's no new player out there. The old architecture is just fine, and it can, you know, just happily exist for many, many years, and there's no reason to change anything unless there's a reason to do so. One of the, I kind of thought about this actually this morning. I was a little upset that I have all of these mountaineering pictures. I do a lot of climbing. Not one of these pictures in this presentation is a picture of me climbing. And I thought, wow, it'd be cool to have myself show up somewhere in some of these pictures. And the reason why is a lot of my climbing pictures are slides. They're not digital photographs. They're slides on wheels that go, you know, and you can remember only a couple of years ago, you'd go to someone's house and they do a slideshow. Well, slides don't exist anymore. That was, you know, version one technology was called analog film. And the there's a relationship here to, you know, I remember Kodak saying in the late 90s that analog film had a life forever and that everyone would use it forever. And it was only through innovations like digital photography that things actually started to change. And in a lot of ways, ZenSource is bringing some of the newer technologies and newer innovations to virtualization, almost in the same way that digital photography came about. Yeah, those slides work great. They're stable, they're rock solid, you can always see the picture, but they're rather inflexible, and the proof point here is I don't have one picture of myself in this presentation. So maybe as I get out and climb somewhere, I'll start using the digital camera. So also in the current market where, you know, ZenSource is really about the open community process and about getting ubiquity in virtualization, there's a single company interest as opposed to the interest of the overall community. And we believe that having many of you, I don't know how many of you actually work on Zen within your companies and that sort, but there's a tremendous community of people. It just blows me away, of industry folks who are working on this code base to really rapidly innovate some of the new things that are occurring in virtualization. And that's tremendous for the industry. The other thing, this is actually a very interesting slide here, because while the term virtualization to many of you, you're all here, you certainly understand the term virtualization. One would assume, based on all the buzz and all of the talk about virtualization, that every server out there is virtualized. And the fact is that there's only a very small portion of new servers that are being virtualized today. So we believe that using an open source model with a new architecture that exploits hardware and what we call paravirtualization, we can actually deliver, and with the community, deliver to the remaining 94% of the market to open up the whole virtualization wave. Because right now, it's only on a very small percentage of new servers. So again, toward the future, we have sort of version one, generation one technology, which is out there, works great. Where ZenSource came along, ZenSource as a company, just for clarity here, we didn't just go out and say, let's go recreate exactly what's out there today and become the open source, architecturally equivalent version to first generation technology. When we started this project, I wasn't at the company, but when the guys who started this project out of Cambridge University started this thing, they knew that there would be hardware assist virtualization, and they knew that operating systems eventually would be what we call paravirtualized, that is, the operating system is knowledgeable about itself being virtualized. And so the architecture, the Zen architecture, really is a step forward in terms of architectural design and takes advantage of these three characteristics. The guys knew that if it were an open source model, we'd get the benefit of the community. They knew that paravirtualization or enlightenment of operating systems was going to be very important in terms of ubiquity, and that hardware assist, I'll talk about this, that Intel and AMD would be putting certain algorithms into the chip, certain features into the chipset that actually made virtualization that much more achievable to the remaining 94% of the market. So open source is an industry standard. As most of you probably know about Veritas, where I have a large part of my background, we were a totally closed source company. So I have come out of an environment, except for the time when I actually worked at the Open Software Foundation a long time ago, and was a programmer there. So I actually did some open source stuff originally in my career. At Veritas, we were totally proprietary. And when I came to ZenSource earlier this year, I didn't get the power of open source. And when you come from a proprietary, it's kind of like in your DNA, you have to do a DNA transfer a little bit to kind of get the power of the open source community. It's coming from a proprietary environment, you just really don't understand how open source actually works. And I'm not fully sure I completely understand it, but I'm way along the ramp here of really appreciating how much impact the community has on the development and innovation curve of technology. It's amazing. So by Zen being open sourced and the Zen hypervisor being open sourced, there's a very rapid rate of innovation, which is fantastic for the industry. It also unifies the industry around a de facto standard. You get ubiquitous distribution, which is very important. If we want to unlock the power of virtualization, it has got to be everywhere. And it really does reduce the cost of development, including us. I would go further to say that if Zen and ZenSource, and we have all the developers who built Zen on our staff and all of that, if we were trying to build a virtualization company, a closed source virtualization company as a startup, you could not capitalize that company efficiently to go do that. The open source in some ways, in exact ways, has created a pool of resources that go way beyond the folks that we have employed by ZenSource, which is absolutely fantastic. I'm also, it's thrilling to note that the Zen downloads are running at about 20,000 per month now. It's on a steady increase and across, 143 countries. So it really has had an amazing global impact. It doesn't solve hunger, but I mean, it has had a big impact in the technology industry. So we as ZenSource have very shared goals with our community. Again, all the folks who worked on the original Zen work at ZenSource. We lead the open development of, the next generation hypervisor. We are delivered to market by a number of different vendors, and we have consistent features in all of our implementations. Again, the open source process has allowed us to have shared goals. It's kind of like when I think about going on an expedition, you have a single solo climber or you have a team of people, and in our view, the open source process and the folks who have been working on Zen really give us this team-oriented approach, and it's worked phenomenally well. And we'll continue to support that. I've really become a huge believer in the power of open source and the power of the innovation curves that can be attacked using the open source process. So a little more on the community effort. We have engineers from all over the world, and I'm happy to say that the engineers that have typically worked on the Zen code base are very senior engineers. Most of the folks are typically employed by some of the largest corporations in the world. Many companies have Zen development labs where there are people who are working to test and certify the Zen code base. So that has led to a pretty mature code base with the Zen technology. Again, the effort aligns the ecosystem. The open development means there's fewer bugs, quicker fixes. This little picture here on this green and yellow, which looks like a periodic table of elements. It's not. That's a bug tracking and user submission sort of source code check-in and bug tracking system that's used really across the world with developers who check in problems, fix bugs to see status reports and that sort. It's also amazing to me to note that on the final point here, OSV partners as operating system vendors and even Intel and AMD to a large extent qualify Zen on their hardware platforms concurrently with the development. And that's it's really new to me to see that. Typically, when you have a hardware vendor or the chip vendor itself, typically you wait for those chips to get out into production, or you get an early, maybe there's an early beta or something like that, and then the software guys program to that. What's happening now with Zen, which is very interesting to me, is way early on, at the time the chip is actually being developed, the Zen stuff is right there, the developers are right there, so you get a very concurrent development with hardware and software running together. And that's that obviously pushes the innovation and what's going to be available to consumers of this in a much shorter time frame. You don't have to wait for hardware, then wait for software, wait for tests. It all sort of happens together. I mentioned this, the open source community is extremely powerful, and it's really more powerful than any single one entity can be. Okay, so the Zen ecosystem, we have, the who's who. I'm sure most of you out here probably work for one of these companies or have worked for one of these companies. We really do have the support of a large constituency who all contribute to the Zen code base. Okay. Guy fell asleep. That always happens to me. Sometimes I have to run behind the curtain to wake the guy up. Probably the most boring job to press the button back there to get the slides to go forward. See, I hold this thing and then there's a light that goes off and, anyway, I don't mean to pick on it. Anyway, he's a nice guy. I met him before this. He was happy that I talked to him. So you have open source. The next step in sort of getting ubiquity in the things that we're doing at ZenSource. Open source, one. Number two, paravirtualization. So in order to achieve ubiquity, what needs to ultimately happen, and where the industry is going right now, is the operating system needs to be aware that itself is going to be virtualized. And that notion is called paravirtualization. It's also called enlightenment. So when you hear enlightenment or you hear paravirtualization, also, just for clarity here, paravirtualization does not mean hardware assist. There's the next step. So you have an operating system that is paravirtualized, i.e. it knows it wants, it can be virtualized. And then there is hardware assist, whereby the hardware takes over in some cases. So paravirtualization is a requirement for an operating system to actually get maximum benefit with the underlying hypervisor. So the operating system cooperates with the underlying hypervisor. The hypercalls ideally should be implemented in hardware, and some of that is happening. And the hypervisor reuses existing OS stacks. So it's interesting to note on the left-hand side, left-hand side here, older technology, and this is really the difference between generation one and where we are today, is older technology on the left-hand side has a very thick microkernel stack. It's a full operating environment. And all of the drivers, so where the generation one technology kind of gets hung up on itself, is all of the drivers on the left-hand side are developed by the vendor who actually builds that microkernel. It's exactly like an operating system company. So if I'm trying to innovate virtualization and I'm trying to push the envelope forward, yet many of my engineers are building device drivers, how much innovation am I really doing into the future? And so what the Zen architecture really does is, first of all, it's a very thin layer. It's a hardware abstraction. Think of it as a hardware abstraction layer. But one of the beauties of the architecture, if you look over on the left of the right there, that one stack called VM0, the Zen architecture actually takes advantage of existing device drivers that are already out there as part of an operating system. So the Zen can leverage the existing OS software driver stack, which is very important, because whatever works on a system, whatever operating system, if those drivers have already been tested for that hardware, it will work in a Zen architecture. And that's a very unique thing, because we actually can leverage all the work that's been done, all the boring work to go do a new driver is just taken advantage of by the Zen architecture. Okay. So Zen, we really pioneered this approach for paravirtualization, and it is now going to be embraced by all operating system vendors in their next release. Okay, so enlightened operating systems. To kind of prove the point, it's not just me up here saying that this is a thing that we wish to happen, it is going to happen. Enlightened operating systems will be all of the major x86 operating systems on the planet will be enlightened over the next N years here. Red Hat, Novell, Solaris, and Windows will all be enlightened to take advantage so that the operating system itself will know that it needs to be virtualized. And this is a big step in terms of getting ubiquity for virtualization. The other point here is hardware-assisted virtualization. So we have open source, paravirtualization, and the enlightenment of operating systems, and hardware-assist virtualization as trends leading to ubiquity. By 2007, all new x86 servers will have hardware support for virtualization. And there's an interesting, it's perhaps an analogy, it's a proof point, but what we like to draw as a comparison in this graph here, which I know is an eye chart, it just shows little data points here. That's a graph of floating point operations in a processor, and what has happened is while that floating point is sort of a good analogy. Floating point operations used to be emulated in software before the x86 chip or something in the late 80s. In the mid 80s and before on x86 architecture, floating point was emulated. At some point, in the late 80s, floating point moved into hardware, and now applications, operating systems simply use the floating point operations in the chip as a property of the environment. Well, virtualization is exactly the same thing, that there are calls, functions that will move into the hardware, and as a result of that, we will start to take, the industry will start to gain benefit of the performance improvements in virtualization as a result of this stuff moving into hardware. And that graph just shows that over time, everything sort of wins out in hardware. Yeah, it'll be a little slow to start with, but with new revs and stuff over time, it's going to be very, very fast and will be very robust. I'd like to point to sort of today, it's sort of today and where we're going in the future here and what ZenSource is doing related to sort of virtualization and some of our business model a little bit on how we as ZenSource with Zen see the industry unfolding and how our products unfold. I'd like to talk about this slide, the virtualization usage model, because it's actually interesting in terms of how the industry, I believe, either today or will consume virtualization. It's really sort of today. So if you look at VMware today is a platform virtualization solution. And that means that you have, it's a fat platform, but it's a platform, and it sits on a server, and you virtualize guests on top of it, Linux or Windows. That's a platform. You manage the environment, you manage the virtualization as a property of the virtualization engine. Now, as operating systems start to include virtualization, there's a concept called, it's a term we're using, OS integrated virtualization. That's where the operating system itself has virtualization built in. So Microsoft with Viridian and our ZenSource relationship with Microsoft, I'll talk about that. Red Hat will have Zen, Novell Zen, Sun Zen, BSD. Simon, I don't know what the star means. You need to tell me star BSD, but oh, all the versions of BSD. Simon added this at the last minute to try to trick me, so anyway. I don't know why the star shouldn't be after the thing, but anyway. Shouldn't have Simon edit it online here. Okay, so the operating systems in the not-too-distant future will have virtualization built in. We believe that as ZenSource, the consumption model will be determined by the environment and by the user. That is, some users who have homogeneous environments, let's say if you're all RHEL environment or whatever, you may want to run your virtualization as a property of the operating system. In homogeneous environments, you may want to run heterogeneous environments, you may want to run the platform virtualization. In our view, and what I wanted to make sure at ZenSource, we wanted to make sure that Zen, as a fundamental ingredient, was available on both sides. So no matter how a consumer decides to use virtualization, that Zen was available on both sides. And our model is, we know that in the future, there will be some, you know, I don't know what the percentages of this will be. Only time will tell. But what was very important for us was that Zen was on both sides. And we've, you know, sort of achieved that in mostly achieved that right now. I mean, the operating systems all plan to have that. So towards Zen on every server, this is sort of a picture of what I just explained. We have today's world where VMware is out there with a proprietary, and Windows Server, by the way, which is out there as a proprietary virtualization platform. ZenSource came around, or Zen, as the open source project for virtualization came around, and to create an open, extensible, again, virtualization platform. What was, then ZenSource as a company came about to go commercialize and harden some of the open source stuff and provide commercial products in this space. From there, the industry, the first sort of announcement around the use of Zen was that Red Hat, Novell, and Sun, Solaris, we're going to embed Zen into their operating systems. Zen Source has a product for platform virtualization called Zen Enterprise, which I'll talk about. It's going to be generally available next week. And that is basically the Zen commercial product for platform virtualization. And with our announcement, so on the right-hand side, what Zen Source will do, we will build extension packs. So that is added value products that extend Zen in Red Hat and Novell and Solaris. So we'll build added value products that, you know, again, extend and manage virtualization. And with our new Microsoft announcement, Zen will also build extension packs on top of the Windows Longhorn base. So in either case, as a company, we wanted to make sure that we could provide Zen and Zen Source goodness across the industry, bridging Linux and Windows, regardless of how users consume their virtualization. So we like to say that Zen Enterprise is virtualization for the remaining 94%. There's a very big market out there. We will be delivering our product Zen Enterprise. It supports multiple operating systems. We'll have guest support, very easy to use. And I have, you know, there's sort of the comparative of if you download the open source bits, you know, I like to say that even though we have 20,000 downloads of these a month, the conventional wisdom is that when you download the open source bits, you sort of need a PhD in virtualization to actually get this stuff up and running. And what we have done with Zen Enterprise is really made the consumption and the pricing of this to be really available for the other 94%. And I have a personal story here on Zen Enterprise, which is actually interesting. We had a 4th of July party at Zen Source, and you know, we had our keg of beer or bottles of beer or whatever. And I was at the party, drank a couple of beers, and was standing around talking to our engineers. Had never used Zen Enterprise before, never touched, you know, God forbid, you don't want me touching the code, never touched the code, didn't do anything. And I announced after having two beers, so I was moderately under the influence, I said, okay guys, give me a CD, I want to install Zen Enterprise right now, no manual, no nothing, and no one say a word to me. So I sat down to basically, they had to point me at a computer, and I sat down to the computer, and under the influence, with no manual, I got through the installation and instantiated a couple of guests in about 15 minutes. So it's really it does work quite well. In fact, we joked that we had a distributor meeting last week, and there were a couple of guys from Ireland in the room, and they joked that one of the promotions that they were going to do would be a CD and two cans of Guinness, and that would be so it seems like, you know, that seemed like a good one. So anyway, it really is easy to use, and we, you know, going after the mass market and really going after a broad sort of mid-market approach with Windows, it really did have to be easy to use. And so it really is quite easy. I'd love to, you know, you all should try it. High performance, the extensible architecture and all that, there's a bundled management console, so all that will be available as of next week. So our commitment to getting this stuff out there, and I, you know, there's the slide to the picture is the description on how to get to the description. It's the route on how you get to the top of Mount Everest, and there's all these camps and all that stuff. I view this in a very, you know, the building of a company and the building of Zen Source and what we do as sort of our expedition to get to the summit. And so just in terms of our what's happened in the past and where we're going and some of the things that you should expect from us over the near term, and then I'll talk about some future things, but just, you know, in 02, Zen version 1, the open source was released. So there was actually development starting out probably right around the year 2000 was when some of this got started. Zen Source was founded late 04, early 05. In Q4 of 05, Red Hat and Novell stated plans to ship Zen 3.0 and their next releases or subsequent releases. I wouldn't say actually next releases, but subsequent releases of the operating system. I will talk about our Microsoft announcement. I know sort of speaking about a Microsoft announcement at Linux World may be a little counterintuitive, but it's actually a very interesting announcement related to the whole Linux community. And we think that we've really, it's a landmark agreement because for a whole variety of reasons. I'll talk about that, but we announced that a month ago. And in August 06, which is right now, SLES 10 ships with Xen. We have our Xen Enterprise GA going out, which is for platform virtualization. We're also beginning for the community and for assuredness that when something is Xen, it actually means Xen, and you can be certified against it and all that. We're building a Xen certification initiative, an interoperability initiative. That actually started a couple of weeks ago, and there was a meeting here at Linux World. So we're doing a lot of work to make sure at the hypervisor level that there's certification and certainty that when something is called Xen, it actually means it's called Xen. And that further goes to licensing the Xen trademark to partners shipping official Xen releases. Because one thing that is very important, I know this about enterprise, I just know this about the computing industry, is that in order for this stuff to take and to be ubiquitous, there needs to be a certainty that when something is called Xen, in this case, it actually means it's Xen. That means it's got to be certified and it's got to contain the correct bits so that somebody, when they use it, is certain that this is exactly what it is supposed to do, and it contains the components that, you know, Xen is supposed to have. And in the open source world, those things can get a little tricky. In October, and I expect hopefully we can beat this a little bit, we have as ZenSource, we have really no management agenda. We're really sticking to the hypervisor level and what we're calling sort of hypervisor middleware. There's no management tools agenda that we have as a company. And we believe, as a platform company, we ought to be encouraging ISVs to work on top of the Xen infrastructure. So ZenSource, within the next month or so, we're going to announce an ISV program. If anybody's interested, you can go to our website. I think we're taking signups now. We've talked to a lot of folks. We have an ISV manager. We'll announce the whole program so that folks can get started with, you know, SDKs and really programming to the platform. And we'd love to have, you know, as many tools running on top of Xen as possible. We as ZenSource want to go make that happen, and our ISV program is intended to do that. And then later this year, RHEL will ship with Xen. So these are just sort of things that are going to happen over the next, really little bit here. And there's a lot of stuff that's gone on. It's very interesting. Okay. So our partnership with Microsoft. Yeah, we got a lot of press. There was a lot of press coverage. That's not why you do a deal for press coverage, but there was a resulting effect that, you know, it's actually interesting because when you think about these companies, small companies like ours, there's folks who think, well, what are the likely deals that a company like this would go and do? And the last deal that anyone thought ZenSource would do would be a deal with Microsoft. And it's not that we were forced into it or, you know, somebody twisted our arm. We believe that this is the right thing in order to get virtualization everywhere and to make Linux a first-class citizen on top of Windows. We went ahead and you know, did this deal, and I think it's great for the Linux community. I'll talk about it in the next couple of slides here. So in March of 06, so if you go back to Linux World Boston a couple of, 6 months ago, I'm just going through here. I want to get through the, okay, so this is what I wanted to get to. So at Linux World Boston, there was an announcement that Microsoft would support Linux. Well, at that time, Linux, the plan for Linux, or, you know, the way that you would get Linux support, was really Linux as a second-class citizen on top of Windows. And that meant that it was not paravirtualized, so it wasn't enlightened, it would have poor performance, it would have emulated I.O., no support for hardware, no interoperability guarantees. So all kind of, it's okay, but no one in there, only in the case where somebody may wanted to test this environment out or whatever. I don't think anybody would ever run Linux, not anyone, but there's a high degree that Linux would not really run well on top of Microsoft in this Windows in this environment. With our deal with Microsoft, we now create an environment whereby Linux is a first-class citizen running on top of Windows, and for the Linux community, this now opens up a very big market for users who want to run Linux on top of a Windows infrastructure. So we believe that this really does open up a large part of the market that was typically closed off to the Linux community. Linux, again, becomes a first-class citizen in the Microsoft environment. Okay, so this slide here shows the guys getting across the crevasse here. Bridging Linux and Windows. So I wanted to just mention the kinds of things that we are doing at ZenSource to bridge the Linux and Windows world and how we see sort of our products and our involvement in the community and in our business, what we're doing here. So this is our description of how we view our company and sort of the things that we do at ZenSource. Where do we spend our time and energy? And how are we looking at doing certain things into the future? And what should you expect from the company? One, we're going to continue to support the open source process. We are absolutely, going to take the hypervisor and lead the Zen effort for as long as the community needs that to happen. And, there's so much work to be done in this space, it can go on basically forever. So what we have is we have on the left-hand side, start with the bottom, we have Red Hat and Novell carrying open source Zen. So that's a great building block. We have Zen Enterprise, which has open source Zen for platform virtualization. And on the right-hand side, Windows, which contains Zen source bits for Zen enablement on the right-hand side. What we will do as a company is the whole notion of ubiquity is only further achieved by interoperability between these environments. That is, virtualization can be ubiquitous, but really the sort of holy grail is when there's truly interoperability and a notion of management semantics that allow you, one, to move from a Windows environment into a Linux environment, from a platform virtualization environment into an OS integrated one, and those characteristics should all be transparent to the user. So what we'll do as our involvement with the Linux operating system vendors on the left-hand side and with Microsoft on the right-hand side is to really bridge these environments by building a common skin around this, a common interface around all this stuff, such that as an enterprise starts to deploy a Zen-based product line, one can be assured that many of the next level of services will all work interoperably across these environments. This is not for the faint of heart. I mean, this is something that we're going to be working on for the next several years. So we have on the left-hand side, Windows on Zen is something that we will offer. We'll also, in the middle, the blue boxes are things that we will be working on into the future. Platform and lifecycle management, security, storage management, high availability, virtual appliances are all things that at ZenSource we will be working on as added value services on top of the underlying hypervisor. On the right-hand side, we'll also be working very closely with the Linux operating system vendors to be sure that Linux is a first-class supported citizen on top of Iridium. And we'll make sure at ZenSource that these environments can absolutely happen. At the next layer up, there's a Zen Management API. We're working with the DMTF on a distributed management protocol. I think that work is going quite well. We're very supportive of that, and that's really where this management API comes into play. And, of course, up in the left-hand corner there, you have Zen Enterprise Management, which is the console to manage this stuff. But again, we're stopping at that layer. Anything above that, anything sort of at the management API level, third-party management tools, the ISV community. We absolutely want to promote an ecosystem of vendors to work within this underlying architecture. And so we're going to do everything we can as a company to make sure that we have a perfect bridge between Linux and Windows, full interoperability with a set of services at the hypervisor level that really add performance, availability, manageability, those kinds of ingredients to the environment. Okay, so virtualization beyond consolidation. Right now, most of, and even as Xen gets out there and Xen source products get out there, most of the world today looks at virtualization as a mechanism for consolidating servers. That is, I have 10 blade servers that are at 10% utilization, and I move that to, I move those 10 or 8 to 1 or 10 to 1, whatever the dynamics are. That's a consolidation play. It's very important because that saves power, it saves management expense, all of that. So consolidation, a very important property. Of course, you get that with virtualization. But where do we see virtualization going in terms of beyond the consolidation plan? I'd say this is sort of, the future stuff, and really, I don't know, that's the holy grail, because being able to consolidate is certainly a nice property. These are some of the things that we see happening in the virtualization space, and we'll be working towards this over the next N years. First of all, we'd love to see Xen embedded in every client and every server, full stop. That means that we have a ubiquitous platform. However those Xen bits are instantiated out there will be fantastic for the industry, because now we've stabilized on a unified base. Drivers, security, and storage as platform components. What this means, and this is a near term, it's a near term, over the next N years here, we'll start to see this, where the device drivers, the security properties of an environment, and storage are all, those properties are shared by every guest in that environment. Meaning that I can have new versions of an operating system, a guest, let's say I run five guests or five OSs, Linux and Windows and different versions, all on one piece of hardware. Those guests will all use the same drivers, the same security, and same storage components as one another. So that eliminates all of the recertification of storage and security. You create a very tightly manageable environment, because the guests are all sharing these underlying properties, which is, that's one of the properties of Xen, and we expect to get there at some point over the next N years here. One of the other very nice things is, from a patch and update standpoint, and we can patch and upgrade secured stored VMs, meaning that if there's a problem or you want to go to a next rev, imagine a world where VMs are stored on disk, the OS vendor says we have patch, blah, 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 and that stored OS becomes upgraded and that patch becomes immediately usable. VMs that run anywhere instantly. So we talk about no OS or app installation, so really we can contain entire environments into a VM. We have, the ability to do simple suspend and resume or freeze and thaw, such that we can take a VM, you freeze it, and then run it instantly somewhere else. Has some really interesting properties in terms of test and dev, in terms of IT operations, being able to suspend something and then resuming it somewhere else. I came from an environment at Veritas where replication and availability and all of those things were things that we spent many, many years creating. And the notion that virtualization can actually help many of those characteristics is really an very interesting property that I see going many, many years into the future. The other thing is, software appliances really transform industry practice. And a software appliance, and what it says, it's a container that contains the version of the operating system, the application, the virtual machine, all packaged together as one as one entity such that a version and that operating system can be instantiated instantaneously as a property of that system. So no longer, and you know, if you only do one of these, there's sort of no sense. You don't need virtualization. I mean, so you know, some people say, well, big deal, so you have an app and a server. The point is that in many environments, you may want to instantiate thousands of these things. Little different operating systems, different versions, that kind of thing, and they can all be instantiated and run in different environments. So some new benefits, preserving legacy apps for all time. You know, again, we by moving a number of things out of the application and into the virtualization infrastructure, you can preserve the legacy of an application. New life for thin computing. And this is something that is actually pretty interesting. You know, there's a whole new, Citrix is a great company, there's a whole new Citrix model here whereby you have all of these VMs running. You know, right now when somebody runs Citrix, it's a big a server, you know, the bits get sprayed to all of these clients, thin clients out there from one operating environment. Imagine if every client had its own OS that can then spit bits back to the thin client. You'd have a whole different model there from a security standpoint and from a performance standpoint relative to thin computing. This is an interesting one, the discard after use browser VM. So imagine, you know, just a property of a virtual machine where the virtual machine and the web browser was the only thing that, you know, that was the virtual machine, web browser OS. And suppose I got a virus or something got downloaded inadvertently to that virtual machine, I basically can just discard that thing and throw it away and it has no impact on the rest of my system. There's a lot of client-side applications here that are actually pretty interesting. This one, the go back button, is something that I, from my Veritas days, I think this one is actually really interesting, not only from a client standpoint, but from a server standpoint. Imagine a world whereby something happens to my operating environment, user error, something like that, and I want to go back to 5 minutes ago. But I don't only want to go back with my data, I want to go back with my process state and my application state to what happened 5 minutes ago. And so the go back button basically is a snapshotted state of, you know, something that happened a few minutes ago, a few years ago. I mean, it depends how far back you want to go, sort of the, you know, the time machine. Unfortunately, we can't go ahead right now, but we can certainly take you back, but it's really actually, it's very powerful. When companies have system problems and manual errors, sometimes these problems can take down environments for days on end because there's no way to simply go back to, you know, please just take me back to right after I pressed that return key and blew away my whole system. So these are ways of snapshotting environments. That can happen on client and server side. Another one which I personally like is an embedded IT personality. So imagine a world where the VM has embedded IT operations, self-service options, that kind of thing, that actually communicates back to the manufacturer to notify the manufacturer when there's a bug, and then you can do an online upgrade or suggest that they just run a different virtual machine to get around the issue that they might have. And then finally, the whole notion of high availability and fault tolerance using commodity hardware. Given that the platform is in place and you have a driver stack that is being constantly reused and or used by the guest operating systems, that driver stack can be made highly resilient and highly fault tolerant such that you potentially can have device drivers that run in lockstep, or if a driver fails, you can start a new one up, those kinds of things using commodity hardware. So again, the notion that virtualization is in place yields to us a very robust future of innovation around lots of concepts that are sort of out there. And if you know this, it's not on here, and I hate to use the term grid computing. I mean, it's kind of like the, you know, the ultimate holy grail. But if you think about the missing link between what grid computing's promise is or was and where it needs to go, a lot of that has to do with a lot of these properties of virtualization that, again, unlocks the physical to hard, you know, the physical to virtual environment and unlocks that the movement of the operating system and the guests that sit on top of it. So while grid computing as we know it may be still way off, I do believe that this is sort of the catalyst, this virtualization is really the catalyst to make these machines and all of that really run correctly. So to just end here, this ubiquity delivers choice. I mean, the whole bottom line here is that by being ubiquitous, by having sort of Zen everywhere, and having virtual, you know, more importantly, having virtualization everywhere, we can envision a world whereby VMware is out there, Zen is out there, Viridian is out there, and the guests and the appliances that run on top of these environments are totally interchangeable. And that's a very powerful statement for the industry. You can imagine on the bottom right-hand side, you have MySQL or Red Hat running on top of Windows. Viridian is the Windows hypervisor coming out in the not-too-distant future here. And you can imagine on top of Xen or on top of VMware running SQL Server or running Microsoft Exchange or something like that on top of these and on top of the Xen environment, all packaged into these appliances and having all these things being interoperable. And by being able to do this and being able to really move from these environments, there really will be a world where this, where we really unlock a lot of the power in the IT organization. So, to summarize here, past, present, and future. In the past, where we have, you know, poor tools and the old mountain, the black and white mountain climbers, we have a very slow, complex, proprietary process, expensive, limited market penetration. That's sort of past and today. We have the present, where there's a new power virtualized architecture endorsed by all operating system vendors, naturally aligned with the hardware, and the ubiquity is fostered through the open source process and through the open source standard, kind of taking us to a world whereby we have virtualization everywhere, and that really is the theme. We want it to be everywhere. It's only on 6%, need to get it to 100%. We enable the creation of new applications and services as a result of it being everywhere, and we believe ultimately that it unlocks, you know, IT budgets for doing more innovation and new and interesting things. I can't believe that look, there's a timer up here. And when I said things, it went to zero. So that's, and I hadn't really looked at it much. So that's actually pretty good. I think this is the last one. So thanks.